number two, please. Enry Forest Alliance versus the U.S. Forest Service.
May it please the court. The issues presented by this appeal are both straightforward and complex. Fortunately, the legal issues, which are the issues that the plaintiffs are asking the court to address, are fairly straightforward. It's the underlying scientific and factual issues which are complex, but I want to make it clear that the plaintiffs concede that ultimately the defendants must resolve those issues when this case is remanded. I'd like to give examples regarding both of the issues presented. The first issue, of course, is whether there is, in fact, a substantial scientific controversy regarding the environmental impacts of the defendant's wildlife openings proposal. We think the record clearly shows that there is, and that the law required the Forest Service to take a hard look at that controversy. Ultimately, after the Forest Service does that, plaintiffs agree that it is their choice. But we want to make sure that the Forest Service makes an informed choice and that the public is aware of the choice that they made and the reasons that they made it. That's why we believe an environmental impact statement is necessary.
How long would it take, do you think, to put together this environmental impact statement and have it go through the same procedure?
Your Honor, in terms of environmental impact statements, I don't think this would be a particularly complex one. There is a notice period after they put out the environmental impact statement, a minimum of 30 days. They have to let the public comment on it, and then they have to respond to those comments. So I don't see any reason.
How long would it take to write it?
I would say a matter of months, but I think the defendants would be the better party to answer that question. I've seen environmental impact statements prepared in under 6 months.
And some over several years.
Some of them much longer, Your Honor. For example, on a highway project, I'm working on a case now where they've been drafting the statement for 6 years.
What is your explanation, if any, for the wide variance in the expert opinions?
Your Honor, that is a very good question. I think it's because the science has changed so much over the recent years. If you look at the scientific authorities, for example, that Dr. Whitehead has cited to the Forest Service, they're all from the last decade. And I think that's very important, that the science is changing and we're in a process of better understanding the habitat requirements of these species, which I think makes it all the more important that the Forest Service take a very hard look at this to see if they're getting it right. I think an EIS is justified here because the issue, I think, is whether they get the habitat requirements correct now while these species are still in relatively good shape, or that whether they have to spend a lot more money in the future when some of these species are listed under the Endangered Species Act. In fact, one of the species that's of concern here, there already is a petition that's been filed for its listing, the Cerulean Warbler. So I think that's one reason why an environmental impact statement is justified now, so that they can maybe avoid a listing of some of these species.
Well, at this point, isn't it at least theoretically the status quo that is supposedly being maintained? And what you seem to advocate is that it's time to do away with these open spaces and revert to whatever the second and third stages are, so that we'll call it goes back to nature. I know that's kind of trite. Essentially, leave it alone and that'll be what we want.
I think there's two things I'd like to respond to that, Your Honor. First of all, my clients don't necessarily want to get rid of these openings. They are very concerned about the open land species and their viability. In fact, some of the open land species are in more serious trouble than the forested species. What the scientists, I think, are concerned about is they want to make sure the Forest Service is, in fact, getting that right. Is getting that right, you know, the habitat requirements of these species. The main point that as I read the scientists' comments, is that these openings aren't big enough, and that the Forest Service, if they're going to do this artificially, should be maintaining fewer, much larger openings. That's what the scientists seem to be saying. And what I find is interesting is the Forest Service, in their comments, seems to agree with that.
Well, that would be a major change. That would probably require an EIS.
I think that would be a major change, but the science seems to indicate that that's a justified change, or at least something that they should look at much more closely, which they did not do in the EA.
On the other hand, the Forest Service had testimony that was waived that took contrary positions to what your experts say. And so in terms of us trying to determine whether it's arbitrary or capricious, you know, what do you think your best case is that you rely on to support your position, realizing that these are fact-intensive
Absolutely, Your Honor. I think the decisions that we list in the brief from the Ninth Circuit on this issue, several of them, I think, are almost factually indistinguishable. Sierra Club versus U.S. Forest Service, the Wild Sheep decision, the National Parks decision, and the more recent district court decision, National Audubon, all involve scientific disputes. I think National Audubon, in fact, involved some disputes about the scientific knowledge regarding a bird colony that U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was proposing to move. And there was a scientific dispute about the extent of knowledge and what the actual impacts of that were going to be. I think one thing that distinguishes this case from, and makes it even more pressing to do an EIS from most of those cases, is the fact that at least in the first cases I cited, the appellate court decisions from the Ninth Circuit, the issue was the incidental effects. You know, whether the project would actually achieve its purposes. For example, I believe in Wild Sheep, the issue was whether to reopen a road. There was no question that they could successfully reopen the road, but the issue was what would the impacts be. Here the dissenting scientists are actually questioning whether the project will achieve its intended purpose, which is to provide suitable habitat for open land species. The dissenting scientists are questioning whether they're doing that. And I think that really distinguishes this and makes the need for an EIS even more pressing here.
But their opinions are certainly divergent.
I agree with you, Your Honor. Very divergent. And I don't think the record reflects that the Forest Service has taken a close enough look at those divergent opinions.
I wouldn't jump to that conclusion.
But yeah, I agree with you that they are very divergent. And it would be the plaintiff's position that that kind of divergence deserves much more than 3 pages of response to comments, which is all we have right now.
Is that what you're relying on, just because it is 3 pages?
No, it's also...
Don't you think a lawyer can say more in 3 pages than some other one can say in 100?
A good lawyer, if they're being careful, can, Your Honor, but I don't think the Forest Service did that here. I absolutely agree with you that I don't want to be relying on just the length of it, because I don't think that's appropriate at all. What I'm looking at
is
the substance.
You are relying on.
Well, I mention that simply because I think that reflects the substance, too, because they really didn't have much to say except reiterating what they said in the EA, which is sort of circular.
Can you speak to the species monitoring methodology that the Forest Service has used here? Because it seems that Inland Empire and Iowa Sporting Congress endorsed that methodology.
They do, Your Honor. I think there is a direct split among the circuits on this issue, with Inland Empire having approved the Forest Service sole use of habitat to determine viability, and the Sierra Club versus Martin decision from the 11th Circuit rejecting that argument. I think the better reasoned decision is the 11th Circuit. When you look at the regulations, I think it's important to distinguish here the situation between a land management plan when that's promulgated, which was the case in Merida, this court's decision, which both the district court and the defendants have relied on heavily, and a situation when you're implementing a plan. When you're proposing a plan, you of course have to make projections about what the plan is going to do in the future, and you rely on habitat, and you make a lot of assumptions in the plan. And that's what happened in Merida, and that's what this court upheld in Merida. When you implement a plan, though, I think the Forest Service's regulations require them to test those assumptions and to a certain degree, to see whether or not the management that they're undertaking actually does have the impacts that they thought it would have. Now,
that would require a specific count, wouldn't it?
Yes, I think it would, Your Honor, because if you don't have some sort of population data, you're just repeating the same assumptions that you made in the plan.
I looked in some of your documents where you count deer and raccoons. Anybody can do that, but when you get into I don't even know the names of some of these birds, when they come to my bird feeder, I go, and so you really need some high expertise plus some real knowledge about where you find them.
I agree with that, and I want to make it clear that exactly how the Forest Service should do that is up to them, and that's going to be up to them to determine. There actually was some data offered to them here, and this is one of the plaintiff's biggest concerns, is that two of the dissenting scientists offered population data that they had obtained from the Hoosier National Forest over four very recent years looking at these wildlife openings. The Forest Service simply ignored that and offered none of their own.
Isn't it very clear that the service is entitled to use their own method, their own methodology, unless it's irrational?
I think they can. They have to also follow their own regulations, Your Honor. And I think when you read the regulations, as the 11th Circuit did in Sierra Club versus Martin, that just looking at habitat isn't.
Then how do you overcome the California versus Watt enunciation of the law?
Again,
which
Your Honor,
says that the service is entitled to use its own methodology unless it is irrational.
I think
isn't that pretty broad?
I think that's broad, Your Honor, but I think it's irrational to ignore your own regulations, which I think is different. And the regulations clearly, when you read them together, as the 11th Circuit did, talk about inventory data and looking at population trends. You can't do that just looking at habitat. And if the court has no additional questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All right.
Your Honors, may it please the court. The decision at issue in this case is the Forest Service's decision to preserve certain forest openings in the Hoosier National Forest so that those openings would remain available for use by wildlife species associated with such openings. The Alliance, however, disagrees with the scientific methodologies used by the Forest Service to reach this decision. In particular, the Alliance raises two challenges, first under NEPA and second under the National Forest Management Act. I'd like to address each of these challenges in the order in which they were raised. First, the Alliance alleges that there was some sort of scientific controversy that required the production of an environmental impact statement. But as courts have recognized, the fact that a record contains evidence supporting different scientific opinions does not render an agency decision arbitrary and capricious. Rather, an agency is entitled to rely upon its own experts, unless that reliance is irrational. Here, the Forest Service cited its own studies, and those studies showed that the openings maintenance plan would benefit openings-dependent species without harming species that are more dependent on interior forest lands.
Is the dispute such as he characterized it, where it's not so much maintaining or, I guess, reinvigorating the status quo in open spaces, but that the open space versus the, whatever you call the more mature wood, is simply not the right size, and it really needs to be completely reconfigured. Is that what you think your opponents are arguing? You understand what I'm asking?
Yes, Your Honor. The Forest Alliance presents data that suggests that larger openings would be more beneficial to many of these species that would be protected. However, some large openings are being maintained that these species can use. Moreover, the Forest Service is not required to consider every alternative, and additional alternatives can be considered in future projects. Here, for the alternatives that were considered, the maintenance of forest openings was considered to be the most beneficial for these species. Moreover, the existence of a controversy in and of itself is not enough to require an environmental impact statement.
But the divergence of opinions, and when you look at the credentials of the experts on the forest, of the Alliance, their credentials, if you weigh them, they had substantial credentials. And when you compare them to the credentials of people from the Forest Service, I think they were a little stronger.
That is correct, Your Honor. The credentials were substantial on both sides. However, this is not reliance merely upon the credentials of experts would turn every environmental assessment into a battle of experts. Instead, the agency is entitled to rely upon the opinions of its own experts. And the agency also addressed the opinions of the commentators that were disagreeing with the Forest Service's decision and explained why the Forest Service chose the decision that it did, despite those comments. In Presidio, the Ninth Circuit recognized that controversial is modified by the word highly, thus suggesting that not every controversy is worth consideration. Moreover, in considering controversy, that is listed in the CEQ regulations as one of 10 considerations to be considered in assessing the intensity of an action. That, in turn, is to be considered with the context of an action. Even in national parks, which the Alliance relies upon heavily, the court recognized that there was no dispute as to the context of that action. The context of that action was, and I can't quote it exactly, was the decision to allow cruise ships into the most spectacular place on this planet. Here, the context of the action is to maintain forest openings that are already being maintained. And alternatively, though the Alliance disputes whether or not these openings are large enough in size to maintain all of these species, of the alternatives that were considered by the Forest Service, this seemed to be the most beneficial.
Is there any federal reg that mandate the use of any particular method of collecting data for the preparation of an assessment?
Your Honor, as Inland Empire and indeed this court in Merida recognized, the Forest Service regulations leave a lot of discretion to the Forest Service. They mandate They state that planning alternatives under 219.19 shall be stated and evaluated in terms of both amount and quality of habitat and of animal population trends of the management indicator species. The specific word there is trends. Moreover, in 219.26, which the Alliance raises, the regulations specify that inventory shall include quantitative data, making possible the evaluation of diversity, but it doesn't say that inventory shall be composed entirely of quantitative data and cannot be projected. In this case, the Forest Service did rely upon quantitative data. It relied upon surveys that were conducted both by the breeding bird survey as well as surveys done from hunters' catches. The Forest Service relied upon this information and determined that openings-dependent species were being affected negatively by the overgrowth of those openings lands. Moreover, thus, the Alliance essentially disagrees with the methodology chosen by the Forest Service. Even in the cases cited by the Alliance in support of this so-called counting requirement, those cases relied upon specifications that were in the forest plans themselves. In Martin, in Sierra Club versus USDA, the non-presidential, non-published opinion of this circuit, there was a specific requirement in the forest plan to include point counts and a road and trail census. There is no such requirement here. In this case, the Hoosier National Forest Plan merely mandates the monitoring of trends. All in all, the record demonstrates that the Forest Service complied with both the procedural requirements of NEPA and the monitoring requirements of NIFMA. Accordingly, this court should affirm the district court's grant of summary judgment in favor of the Forest Service.
I have two just brief questions that are sort of collateral, I guess. Number one is, as far as the, is there some underlying controversy that doesn't meet the eye, or is this pretty straight up as far as you're concerned, that it's just a discrepancy about the bird population and what is in, you know, what is in the best interest of the various species. Is that all there is to it, or is there some other thing that is out there by hunting or hiking or traffic or something else that they would want an EIS that would delay this process?
To the best of my knowledge, I don't know of any other
controversy.
Well,
you would know more than anybody. So if you don't know, then that's that question.
Can you speak to the 11th Circuit case that dealt with the species monitoring methodology?
Yes. First of all, Martin had a quantitative element in the forest plan itself. But to the extent that the 11th Circuit was speaking towards the requirements that are in the forest regulations themselves, we think that Martin was misreading the regulations. In Martin purported to rely upon 219.26, the language that says that inventories shall include quantitative data, making possible the evaluation of diversity in terms of its prior and present condition. However, shall include does not imply, it does not entail shall be composed entirely of quantitative data, and it does not specify what form of quantitative data that must be used. Rather, that is within the discretion of the Forest Service. Moreover, Martin failed to look at 219.12, which is the actual regulation that addresses what inventories must be used. And that requires the Forest Service to keep current inventory data appropriate for planning and management of forest service, forest resources. Again, that is within the discretion of the Forest Service. Thus, to that extent, we believe that Martin was misreading the Forest Service regulations.
Right.
That is all.
That's all.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
I would like to address the final point that Ms. Tai made first about the appropriateness of the data. The plan at issue here, the land management plan, in fact, addresses that and says that they're supposed to have monitoring data every 3 years. There actually is a provision about that. I think they've now had a chance multiple times, the Forest Service, to come forward and point to quantitative data regarding the non-game management indicator species, and they have failed to do so. So I think we can all assume now that they, in fact, don't have any quantitative data regarding that.
I don't think you can assume that.
Well, Your Honor, I haven't seen any, and there's none in the record.
You know, you say non-game.
Yes.
Now, is that, this probably leads to my other question, is there some concern that they're focusing more on game birds and whatever you want to call things that hunters go after, as opposed to these more exotic birds and rare species? Is there some concern that you have about that?
I think there is a little bit of that in the scientists' comments, and I think it's also reflected in the data that they have. They have data regarding wild turkeys and grouse and woodcock, but they don't have any data regarding cerulean warblers and scarlet tanagers. They're both MIS, and they're both species. They're all species that the Forest Service is supposed to maintain viable populations for. Now, maybe it's easier to get the data regarding the game species. That may be the case, but they're required to have it for all.
They seem to rely on hunters.
Yes.
To count and everything, which is makes sense since they're the ones that are out there, but they're not looking for these warblers.
Right, but there are bird watchers who are out there doing that all the time.
Well, is there some dispute between hunters and bird watchers?
I'm not aware of one, Your Honor.
Okay, that's why I'm asking.
I certainly don't
sometimes
have
sometimes you find, at least surface on these EIS things, that there's more than meets the eye, but apparently neither side sees that.
I mean, I think there is. It's certainly, the Forest Service could decide, if this were remanded, that we want to maintain these small openings for hunting opportunities. But I think they would need to explain why that was justified. I believe one of the scientists determined that 86% of the openings were under 5 acres, which was too small to benefit most of the non-game species. I think they would need to make that clear in their decision that they were maintaining these species for hunters. That certainly, I think, would be within their discretion if the science was also there to support other things that they were doing for the other non-game species. But they would need to make that clear. And they certainly have not done that here. I mean, the EA on its face seems to be much more concerned about the non-game species. The defendants also mentioned that the Forest Service cited their own research, their own independent studies that supported their decisions, and I think that's one of the big problems with the quote, hard look that they took at this. One of the studies that they cite extensively is the Atlas of Breeding Birds, but one of the authors that contributed to that study is Dr. Whitehead, and he, in fact, wrote the section of that on the scarlet tanager, and he strongly disagrees with what they're doing with the scarlet tanager, and yet the Forest Service, when it talks about the tanager, switches sources and goes to another source, so that they're picking and choosing among their scientific sources depending on what they want to say. I think that's something else they need to explain. There also was the issue raised by the government of the status quo, and I think there was some suggestion that this just isn't a very important issue compared to the national parks. I know for the people that live down in the southern part of Indiana and that use the Hoosier all the time, this is a very important issue, how the Hoosier is managed. This is certainly a smaller dispute, smaller in scope than the national parks case presented, but it's a very important issue to those people. And it's one that I think requires an environmental impact statement here so that they can understand why the Forest Service is doing this and how they have, in fact, made this choice, which I don't think is clear from the record, how they have made this choice among the scientists, which apparently they have made. I certainly don't understand how they did it, based on the comments that are in the EA right now. And therefore, Your Honor, we would ask that you reverse the district court's decision and remand this case to the Forest Service, so that they can redo their analysis consistent with the law. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you. We will proceed to case number 3, please.